Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey, audio listeners, if you're checking out the show, we're going to actually play you our immediate reaction to the Bungie Activision news and then go into the full episode. Here it is. Bungie and Activision have decided to separate, and Bungie will retain the rights to Destiny going forward. This is big, big news. I don't think I've heard of this happening very often, maybe with the Hitman franchise, but immediate reactions. I think this is going to be good for the future of Destiny. How do you feel about this as a whole concept?
It's still very, we just heard about it literally about 5 minutes ago. We saw it on Twitter. I think there's a lot of questions. Number one, people have, you know, questions for the franchise itself. Was it Bungie or Activision initiated? I think, will we know those details in the immediate future? 100%. Probably we won't, but for the franchise, I think people will say it's a good thing. Yeah. And for the game, but we'll see how it plays out. There's a lot of details here we need to sort out.
I've never been more excited about the future of Destiny, knowing that Bungie is going to be retaining the franchise. Steven, yes. What are your thoughts?
This is huge. Like, Bungie's technically, they're an indie dev now, right?
Yes, technically.
For the size, no, but yeah.
Well, Jason Schreier reported that this has been in the works for years, even before Destiny 1 release, so.
Well, that there were tensions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that there were rocky relationships. So this is crazy. Like, I wonder if the whole tenure thing is still in effect now and all
that. Well, definitely not, right?
According to Schreier, it said, he tweeted, at today's meeting announcing the news, Bungie staff cheered loudly, can't overemphasize how happy they are, not just to get away from Activision, but to have a game that they now own completely. Imagine a Destiny free from Activision's restrictive annualized schedule. That was his most recent tweet. This is happening,
yeah,
like developing as we go on the show here today. Sean, what's your reaction to this?
I mean, I have lots and lots of questions and mm-hmm. feelings yeah. about this, and I don't know that it's like, it's obviously too early to like render a verdict as to whether or not this is going to be good or bad. I think there's pros and cons on both sides.
Yeah.
I think that the definitive thing that we can all take away from this is that this seems to be a very mutual thing, right? Like, on the Bungie side, I think that they felt Activision was cramping their style in order yeah. it to be short.
Yeah.
And on the Activision side of things, I think they didn't think Bungie was doing enough or creating enough to make the money that they needed, which was reported in their earnings call that Destiny fell short. So I think both parties in this had reason to split ways, and they both found it in their best interest to split ways. This is a huge piece of news, though, because as we were talking about
industry-wide,
like the Activision and Bungie partnership in the beginning was seismic. For the games industry,
Microsoft,
a 10-year franchise, like a huge sprawling sort of universe, potentially over multiple console generations. That was, for Destiny fans, that was huge. For people, for games fans, that was huge. And to have these two parties now going their different ways, that's another seismic shift. And Ryan McCaffrey out there pointed, this is only, to our knowledge, happened once before. in 2007 with Bungie and Microsoft. So this is now two major publishers in the game space that Bungie has divorced themselves from.
But in that, situation, real quick, because the caveat is this is a partnership where before Microsoft actually owned Bungie. So it's a little bit different in that, you know, they're not in the sense splitting like they were from Microsoft. The rules are a little bit different.
Oh, I didn't know Microsoft owned Bungie?
Yeah.
Microsoft owned Bungie. Bungie was first party as a Halo studio for Microsoft. This is a partnership. But in terms of Microsoft was still their publisher.
Yes.
And Activision is still Destiny's publisher. That's similar.
Yeah. So are they going to retain publishing rights? I would assume so. It seems like that seems to be working. Activision did tweet, "Thank you, Guardians. It's been an honor and a privilege to help bring the world of Destiny to life for you. Today we're announcing plans for Bungie to assume full publishing rights and responsibilities for the Destiny franchise." I guess I just answered my own question.
Yeah, so this is interesting because this means, like, one of my big questions is, like, I have to imagine that the deal for Destiny 2 will exist until the end of Destiny 2, right? So I don't think we have to worry about Destiny 2 not being on the Blizzard launcher anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's an immediate issue, but it definitely raises questions about future content that wasn't already covered under the current deal. So potential new expansions, whatever we get for Destiny 3, obviously, those could very much be on Steam. It could be in the Epic Store.
Right.
If Bungie really wants to do the self-publish thing instead of partnering with an external publisher, they could self-publish, build their own platform. I think that they'd be the first people to tell you that their community is strong enough and engaged enough to where they could potentially do that. But we might see this pop up. It could be anywhere, right? Like, didn't Epic just snagged Ubisoft as a partnership?
Yeah, Division 2 is only on the Epic Store.
Like, what if an Epic has money flowing out every crevice of their body right now because of Fortnite?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they land Ubisoft as an exclusive partner Division and then also Destiny? They're going to have that whole market cornered. Like, this is going to be such a shift in the, like, I know people, especially in our audience, like to downplay Destiny's importance to the games industry, but this is a mega franchise. This has millions and millions of players, tons of eyes on it, a thriving community of content creators and players and devs. What this franchise decides to do in the future with these newly retained rights from this split, like, it's anyone's guess. It could be – it's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they end up doing with Destiny 3, and that's one of my questions. What is going to happen with the franchise going forward? Are they going to make a Destiny 3? I would hope so. And what is going to happen with their distribution methods, like you brought up with the Epic Store? What other kind of things are you guys curious about? Just general questions.
I mean, I think overall, microtransactions, everybody thinks that
is the Eververse going away.
Is the Eververse going away? Now, I mean, the influence of just
Activision.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, but when you look at how Epic has been monetizing Fortnite, you know, could Bungie potentially make it free to play and have these other avenues in the back? Because I think before, they were probably very difficult to do any of those decisions because they had to make money, period. That was the objective. Now it's right. I mean, they still will need to do that, but I think they'll be able to kind of explore it and take the losses as well as the successes, like, on their own merits. So.
Definitely. Steven, any thoughts from you?
I mean, if they may, like, it's tough for a game like Destiny to be a free-to-play game and buy cosmetics, because you're grinding and you're looting for these cosmetics. Mm-hmm. That's all part of the gameplay mechanic loot. So I don't know how you could kind of support the game with just, like, skins and stuff like that, right? Man, like, I don't know. Like, my prediction is if they are – they're working on Destiny 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to get delayed, in my opinion. They're going to make it the way they want to make it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they're going to keep the roadmap that they've already published.
They have. They confirmed that.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and then the big DLC that usually comes after the fall, like, what is that going to be like?
So
it's going to be huge.
Let's talk about that for a second, because conceptually they are no longer locked into that regular annual pass, the cadence of House of Wolves and Dark Below and the other expansions that they've done throughout the years. They're no longer locked into that. It's their game. They can do whatever they want. I'm excited to see what happens.
It really comes down to what was included in the deal with Activision, right? Like, we don't actually have, like, an end date for that. We assume all the stuff that's in the current annual pass is under the deal, and even whatever the next big September, fall release would probably be under that deal. Everything within Destiny 2, I think, is fair game to say it's part of the Activision deal, right? But after that, Destiny 3, for sure, I don't think you'll see that on the Blizzard launcher. It may be on a different platform entirely. It might be self-published. I do think you're right, Steven. I think it'll be delayed. I also want to point out that while a lot of us are expressing a positive sentiment, as creators ourselves, we fight for that idea that, like, liberate the creator, right? Mm-hmm. Like, give them creative freedom and it'll result in a better game. I do believe that, but I want to point out to the audience, like, a level-headed person, I'm putting on my producer's hat here, mm-hmm. will recognize that this does have a drawback, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're creative, you will gain, Bungie gains creative freedom and the ability to do and make.
Is that on the money?
Exactly. Yeah. They'll lose out on the money, which means the idea that we may have to temper expectations of this idea of getting regular, new, sizable content.
I'm okay with that. I didn't like the release schedule. I thought it forced them into this pigeonhole timeline that they were forced to keep because they would have to launch it due to the Activision deal. I think this frees them up to make excellent content.
Right. But we may have to get that excellent content once a year.
At a slower cadence.
Yeah.
I'm pointing out. I'm just saying, and nowhere has that been confirmed, but these are just the realities of content creation. We have this on a much smaller scale as producers of video at IGN, and a company like Bungie with millions and millions of gamers and, you know, worldwide distribution faces a different challenge, right? But that is the trade-off, which is you gain creative liberty and power over your own game. The expense is that now you're funding it and you have to be a lot smarter and potentially a lot more focused with the amount of content you're creating and distributing.
I agree. Let's wrap this up with one final thought. I just want to know from everybody on the panel, is this good or is this bad for the game and the future of Destiny going forward? I'll start. I think it's going to be excellent, and I think Bungie's going to have new challenges, but I think overall we're going to see an improvement of the quality of life for the Destiny player base, and all those people who have been burned are probably going to have a renewed interest in what Bungie does going forward. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it was interesting when you saw Bungie leave Microsoft way back when and actually get into the deal with Activision right away. I think this is what people wanted way back when. The fact that they're able to do it now, I think it'll be a good thing for the game overall moving forward.
Sean?
I think anytime developers are able to take control of their own IP and do it the way they want, I think that's a good thing. And in that regard, I am excited for what the future brings. But I am also mostly cautiously optimistic because I recognize that there are a lot of drawbacks here without the support of a big publisher. So, you know, I really hope that if it's true that, you know, the Bungie devs were cheering when they heard this news from, you know, the management there, then that's great. I think I'm really happy. I have a lot of questions, and the more this story develops, I think we'll be able to add more perspective.
Definitely, Steven.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. If anything, I think people who have a sour taste of Bungie will give it a chance now.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe this is the reset in the future that everyone was kind of looking for.
Yeah, it's like people hear Activision and Destiny, they're like, oh, we're not playing that game, but that's like, oh, it's maybe we'll try it out.
Definitely. Yeah. That's what we think. What do you guys think? Let us know in the comments below. And Bungie, we'll be watching and wishing you all the best from IGN. Good luck, you guys. Those were our immediate reactions. Thanks for listening to them. And now here is the full episode. Enjoy. Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Today there is big news. Activision and Bungie have split ways. Bungie will retain the rights to Destiny, the franchise going forward, but they're going to have to figure out what's going on with publishing. Their current timeline is all locked in. We're also going to discuss some reactions to the recent Niobe Labs puzzles. Joining me is CJ Gibson.
What's up?
Sean Finnegan.
Chomp chomp.
Steven Rue.
What's up?
I don't even know where to start. I really don't.
How about at the beginning?
Yeah. So well, Bungie, Activision, they've separated ways. Bungie retains rights to the Destiny franchise. We did a reaction episode. It was about 10 minutes of different thoughts that were swirling around in our head. Overall, again, just to reiterate, CJ, this is a net positive, right?
I think that's the perception. It's really weird. We said this yesterday. It is all fresh details. So we don't have any information besides speculation, which will be very rampantly. So besides what's public out there, I think I was talking a little bit about Bungie getting to that place before after they left Microsoft. And yes, I think it's going to be seen as a positive, just from a creativity standpoint. Mm-hmm. Sean mentioned yesterday about being a producer. Yeah, when you're in the production world, you want to understand that it costs money to make things, but at the same time, your vision can be sacrificed or have just layers upon layers of feedback and approvals and all the rest of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's probably what they were facing for years, and who knows when that started. So, yes, I think good thing for Destiny, but also, yeah, like other things could come up on the horizon.
I agree with you. I'm actually in development. I'm developing another feature about a lot of the challenges that they're going to face.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to stick with Battle.net for their PC distribution?
A lot of questions.
Their Sony partnership going to continue? Phil Spencer seemed really happy about this. He's sweeping up companies left and right to try and get exclusives for the Xbox platform.
And he's a big Destiny player as well.
He's a huge Destiny player. He has tons of hours in. Sean, I do agree that this is overall a net positive. I'm very excited for Bungie regaining creative control. I can't wait to see what they do. What's your take?
I mean, I'm on your guys' side here too. I do think overall this is probably a good thing for Bungie. Like I said in the reaction video, anytime a developer can take greater control of their own IP and make the decisions creatively that they want to make, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when I put on my producer's hat, a level-headed perspective of this shows like, let's not pretend that Activision didn't offer Bungie things that are positive as well,
right? Of course, yeah.
Money. All of those, Destiny events, playable demos, like press, marketing, all that stuff. Accessibility is a huge thing. Activision has the ability to put Bungie's game and all their games on every console across the world, on everywhere.
Yeah.
These are problems that Bungie are going to have to solve on their own now without the support of a mega corporation with tons and tons of dollars like Activision.
Yeah.
Now, is that a bad thing or a good thing? It's too hard to say right now, right?
Yeah.
But now the onus is on Bungie to make sure that they get it right.
I think everyone's going to be watching them. It's going to be eagle eyed. They're like, what are you going to do? What's next for you guys? And they have the NetEase partnership. It seems like they're in development of a project there, based on just how they said they're going to be building new worlds with that backing. Steven, what's your take on the separation?
I mean, you guys already said everything I was going to say. It is an overall positive, but, let's be clear here. Just because they're getting a divorce doesn't mean Destiny's going to be the greatest game of all time now.
Yep.
It wasn't Activision that brought that primary ammo or the primary weapon system, the two primaries, one heavy. It wasn't Activision that throttled that XP bar. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
Like, there are things that Bungie and Activision have both done wrong, and now you can't blame Activision when something does go wrong.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. But I do think because they're not restrained to Activision's content schedule, they will have more time to make better content. But like you said yesterday, we're going to see content droughts, I think.
Yeah, that is a double-edged sword. I think, I mean, we've talked about this at length with Call of Duty franchise and even watching that, lose their campaign. Because when you think about how campaigns are played, you know, you do it once and then that's it. And Destiny as a game is really kind of not designed that way. Like if they designed Destiny like, hey, you're just going to play it once and that is it. That is a bad business strategy and model. But that needs to be factored into it as well, too, right? So we know that probably that was an Activision influence thing that Call of Duty got rid of the campaign, but we all really enjoy that for Destiny. So what does the next Destiny look like?
Do we really, though? Because you talk about campaign and I think about story immediately. Have we really celebrated the story greatly, with the exception of Forsaken? I think Forsaken's probably one of their strongest storytelling moments, and they have great lore.
Yeah.
But the campaign for Destiny 1, remember, they scrapped that like a year out because people didn't like it. They said people at Bungie,
right,
according to the Kotaku article,
yeah,
didn't like it in the state it was in when they showed it. So they redid the project from scratch a year out. That's nuts. And their development cycle has been so tight, which we'll get into in a minute.
Yeah.
This really, really frees them up to explore new avenues of release cadence.
It does, but I think it also puts them in a similar predicament, or a difficult predicament as well. Like, think about Forsaken comes out. How long does it take content creators and or game players like us to actually chew through it?
I mean, are you talking about Niobe Labs? Because we'll get into that later. I mean,
we'll talk about
still
that
not
after.
Finished.
Well, there you go. But that's different. So, but if you think about, like, you know, the buffet is what they're saying, you know, having it be available. You know, they make exceptional DLC drops. Like, Forsaken is amazing, but let's not kid ourselves. That takes a long time to produce that amount of content, and it can get devoured very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be interesting to see, what they lean into and want to focus on as this goes along.
Yeah, I mentioned this is basically kind of a reset, and not in terms of like we need to come up with a new idea like we're for a brand new game, but terms of taking Destiny forward, Bungie has a lot of philosophical decisions that they need to make, right? Like if it turns out that Activision was the type of company that influenced them to change their content drop strategy from $20 DLCs like Curse of Osiris and Warmind into weekly drip-fed content over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. We don't know that that's the case, but if it was, then Bungie has to assess whether or not that strategy is working, or if they do need to go back to the $20 DLCs, or if it is twice a year we get a 10 to 12 hour big piece that are, you know, that's more like Forsaken. Who's to say? And here's the thing is I want to point out, the audience is always wrong in this situation. No one knows what we want, right?
Right.
When we got big once a year content drops or twice a year, everyone was like, this isn't enough, right? And then we get DLCs like Curse of Osiris and Warmind, we're like, these are crap.
Yeah.
And then we get once a week content, we're like, this is like, it's not enough, right? Like, so it's, for all intents and purposes, Bungie's in a really tough spot here.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how they proceed. What are some of the positives that you would like to see come out of this, Steven? Do you want them to totally scrap their release cadence? Do you want them to develop a new way of releasing content?
I mean, so like the reason why I think they're drip feeding us content like that buffet line is because they realize the mini DLCs like Curse of Osiris and Warmind were not well received from the community. And I feel like the reason why those DLCs feel so crappy compared to Forsaken is they had to push those out to meet Activision's timeline.
Yeah. We think.
Yeah. That's what we think. Well, what we're assuming.
The annual pass was part of the agreement, right? The same thing with the Eververse. The Eververse was sort of a compromise based on my research in the last few days. The Eververse was a compromise because they didn't want to continue to do DLCs. They wanted to work on Destiny 2. So they went all in on Destiny 2 to develop that product and develop the Eververse to allow the revenue share to be continuing to go forward.
Yeah. And so like what I'm predicting is they're going to have one big DLC like Forsaken, but there's going to be more depth to it, more layers to it, things that will keep us grinding throughout the year. And then they have these events like Iron Banner, Crimson Days, like, you know, like holiday events. And I think that's what they're going to lean into going from now on. And I think we will start seeing like it costs a lot of money to develop new like new races and enemies and stuff like that, but I think now that they have more time, we could see more enemies and stuff like that.
Here's
less reskins.
Yeah, good point. Here's what I think they're going to do immediately. They're delaying Destiny 3. They're making sure that whatever Destiny 3 is, and maybe it's an evolution of Destiny 2 where it becomes a content distribution platform as opposed to just these regular updates, because they could work with that still. But I just want to see them make a fantastic experience. I want a great story. I want excellent RPG mechanics. And I think they have a vision for what they want to do with the property. They know what the audience wants, and they're doing experiments with that sort of content. Niobe Labs, we'll get more into it later. I think it missed the mark for the majority of the community, but they've learned a lesson there and they tried something and they want to give us those puzzles, those sort of memorable moments.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We'll get, do you have a spot for us to talk about that after in the show?
You want to do Niobe now?
I mean, we could.
No, we're still on this.
I mean, well, okay. So let's talk about, is there any other details about this? Because Niobe Labs, I think, factors in, and without spending too much time with it, then I'll just say that I think that's what's interesting is I do feel that the community wanted more secrets and puzzles, because often, and what's interesting about the Activision announcement is that I think what it proves is relationships are hard, whether or not it's developer, publisher, developer, community, publisher, like however you want to, break it down, it's very difficult. And just thinking about what they're going to do next, like I feel like this was like an answer to, hey, we want to have more secrets, want to have more puzzles, want to have more of this. I don't think it was ill-intended.
No.
But definitely it was probably not widely received as positive for the game, but that is a very tricky spot.
I think that's
spot.
An interesting perspective, because I very much doubt that it was Activision being like, you can't do more puzzles. Like,
I don't think so either.
I think Activision is the boogeyman for a lot of people in the community. They take a look at Destiny and the things that are flawed in it, and they say this is Activision's fault. And I don't think that's necessarily true. Now, you can totally see how a company like Activision, which is, let's be real, no one counts dollars better than Activision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see how that philosophy found its way into things like Eververse or the cadence of content over the course of a year. But as far as like preventing Bungie from really making the gameplay what it needs to be or the puzzles, I find that to be a dubious claim. But that's where my head's at, is like the long-term sort of result of this, I foresee it being Bungie makes better content, but probably less of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then two, I think that what that will result in is a smaller but more engaged community that loves the game. And maybe you'll see a little bit less dissonance. Like instead of the audience being really hot and cold like they are now, maybe you see it a lot more hot, you know?
You both make really good points about the content release. They're going to have to strike that balance, right? Because, okay, maybe the content wasn't the greatest, but they did have a regular content cadence with their DLC packs. We kind of know something's coming in September, or it was.
Yeah.
And we have the annual pass. We know what's happening for until then, basically. Now that they have the franchise, they need to decide what their content release strategy is going to be like.
Absolutely.
And if there's huge content droughts, the content droughts could be worse.
Yeah.
And
because
here's another thing.
They don't have that pressure.
People are saying, oh, this means that there's going to be no more Eververse. I think it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was going to say, money now. They don't have Activision's money. How are they going to make money? They're not going to, like if you take Eververse out, how are you going to make money?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to?
You get your base sale and then you have no supplemental income afterwards except for.
Well, there could be they could lean toward like a World of Warcraft subscription fee. Like,
that's on the table.
No, like I mean, you never know though.
No,
like, I'm saying yes, that's true. I would not like.
So here's an interesting thing. Why not though?
Just because, like, I don't think it has. I don't know, man. It's really hard for me to articulate, to be honest, because like I just hear that for Destiny, and I'm like, that scares me because I feel like that's going to make the community so small, and like it's only going to be hardcore.
World of Warcraft has a subscription fee of $15 a month, and that was at one point like 13 million for 15 million active players.
Yeah, like I'm not arguing about its
ability to work.
Yeah, so I just think it's interesting that like immediately we're so against the idea of a subscription fee. Mm-hmm. My point is that without a publisher being involved and Bungie basically having total free reign to do whatever they want in terms of how they publish the game, every option's on the table. If I'm a Bungie executive, I'm looking very closely at every option and being like, okay, what's going to be best for one, our studio and developers? What's going to make, what's going to give us the greatest opportunity to make the best game? But then two, I have to run a business here. Like, how are we going to make money?
How do we pay everybody?
How do we pay everyone? Yeah. Like,
$100 million is not.
To Steven's point, like, we all say, like, oh, like, there's too many reskins. There's too many recycled missions. There's too many, the same, we're treading the same, public areas over and over again. We want new versions of that. Well, that stuff costs, right?
Yeah.
Now you don't have the support of Activision. Yeah. You're going to have to figure out how to fund those costs on your own. There is a good chance that microtransactions are the easy and fast way to do that.
Yeah.
That said, I think Bungie knows no one wants that. Yeah. And so I don't think that that'll happen.
Steven, we really talked over you. I feel bad. Was there something else you wanted to say?
I forgot. But I think there will be more microtransactions. Maybe like not as random as you open a loot box and you have a chance at this. Maybe you can like buy the thing you want directly. But like how are they going to make money?
So we actually talked about that, how a game like Fortnite is very different than a game like Destiny, because Destiny's fundamental core is the loot. Like,
it's the RNG loot.
The game for the RNG loot.
Oh, they
loot.
Could just sell them.
Yeah, no. Like, they really.
I don't think they'd ever do that.
I'm joking.
No, I know.
That was a joke.
I know. Yeah. And that's, I know you're joking, but Steve and I, cause everybody I think is looking at the Fortnite model and going, okay, how do we kind of have our own version of this, or how do we maybe, you know, pioneer off that? And again, Fortnite's free, so right off the bat, that is a certain, there's a certain incentive or connotation when you're just buying the game. But even now, disassociated with Activision, I feel that, we jokingly said, and you see that, oh, they're an indie dev. They're not an indie dev.
No.
Like, they're small, but they now are their
own. They are an indie dev.
But that's what I mean, like, within the context of what it is. So now I think that, you know, if you bought Eververse items and you know it's going right to Bungie, rather than lining Activision.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen a lot of people say, I'm going to spend more money at Eververse now.
So that, isn't that perception weird? Because a lot of times we don't factor in, or you want to think that it's not a factor who the publisher and the developer and all that stuff are. But again, we've said this with BioWare and Anthem and EA and all this stuff. there's a perception, there's a psychology to it that I don't quite understand, mm-hmm. but it exists because you see people saying that in the comments.
It was interesting to see people jump onto that so quickly, and I'm like, Activision could still be getting a cut of the Eververse.
We may never know.
So you don't know about that. Mm-hmm. And like, what is – Bungie hasn't done anything yet. There's a joke on Reddit right now. It's been 8 hours and there's still bugs in the game. Thanks a lot, Bungie. Yeah.
I saw the thread. It's a good thread.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
On that note also, I hope people do remember this feeling, because what's weird is to look on Twitter and all this stuff and now see, oh, yay, congratulations, good job, good job, good job. How long does that last for? And that to me
doesn't last long.
And I think that's the reason why whenever I come on Fire Team Chat, people accuse me of being the shill, is that as a producer.
No, they accuse me of being the shill.
Well,
we all get it.
Well, there you go. But yeah, I think when you're in the content creation space and when you understand that people are, obviously they want to get paid for their craft and their work, but when you're in a passion project sort of space that I believe gaming development is, I guarantee you a lot of this probably division was like goal and alignment and what you wanted for, you know, financially, but also then, you know, just dedication and like teamwork and vision.
Yeah.
So one of the tweets, I believe it's from Deej, I'm not sure, it might have been the actual Bungie statement itself, without saying explicitly that they're self-publishing, did lead everyone to believe that that's what they're going to be doing, right? I forget the actual phrase,
it's in
and
the
we could look it up.
There. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think the chances are of them teaming up with another publisher? Or what do you guys think, maybe just wild predictions and speculations time, what is, if you're Bungie, what is the way forward here? Is it self-publishing? Is it finding a new publisher who better fits with what you're trying to do? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you thinking here?
The smartest, most beneficial way for them to move forward would be to develop their own product similar to what Epic did, where they can distribute their own games. I think that would be the smartest way for the PC platform. They can still distribute to PlayStation and Xbox. Like, they're going to get certified on those platforms, right? I think you move away from the exclusivity there. You have the product that people want to play. Hopefully they don't need supplemental income from some sort of content exclusivity anymore from Sony. My answer would be it's very unlikely, but that they build their own launcher and launch their game there for the PC platform. My preference is I really like what they did with BNet. I think BNet is really strong, and unfortunately they lose the support of Vicarious Visions, who we haven't talked about yet.
And High Moon,
yeah. So how would they handle a PC port?
I mean, that's the thing that blows my mind is like, if again, I'm sitting here thinking, if I'm a Bungie executive and someone pitches me, you know what we should do? We should build our own platform. I'm like, dude, do you know how hard that is? Like, it took Valve.
That's
like,
why I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, it took Valve millions and millions of dollars and years to get Steam right. And it finally got it right. Now it's amazing.
Look, that's difficult. Look at Origin.
Yeah. Look at Origin. Look at Uplay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Origin's like, remember when Origin launched, how bad it was? And today it's like usable, sort of.
EA is huge.
And EA is huge. Exactly. Like the amount of resources and money it would take to develop a platform for Bungie to self-publish, like its own platform, I think that's a tall order. Through a third-party platform, like a Steam or something.
Or Epic.
We talked a little bit about this, but like Epic just signed
Division 2,
like an exclusive deal with Ubisoft.
Yeah.
If they did the same thing with Bungie, man, they would have a good chunk of these specific games where long-term engagement is the goal for their audience under their banner, which is a great thing for them.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, the speculation, I think, I've seen all these things online as well, too. I mean, I'll give them credit because I think that, you know, they probably, again, I said this before, they wanted to do this a long time ago when they first broke free. I think that from a franchise and even from a development, you now, there's just a whole bunch of different avenues that are available now that were not 10 years ago. Like, you think about signing a deal, being involved with something for 10 years. Like, look at how much technology has changed in 10 years. Yeah. Did Twitch exist 10 years ago?
No, they even said that in their release statement. I'll dig for it here in
my
paper.
So as you do that, like, so just thinking about how fast technology changes, signing a deal any longer than 10 years, initially, that's what seemed flabbergasting. It seemed like a long time back then.
I'll read it to you really quick, Siege. When we first launched our partnership with Activision in 2010, the gaming industry was in a pretty different place.
Yeah.
As an independent studio setting out to build a brand new experience, we wanted a partner willing to take a big leap of faith with us. We had a vision for Destiny that we believed in, but to launch a game of that magnitude, we needed the support of an established partner. Today, we said, peace out, And no, that's not real.
No. Today we said.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's actually a really good point. I want to throw something, a curveball at you guys here, because I think this is an interesting idea that we talked about. I saw people tweeting about this, but what about Microsoft?
See, that's interesting because you flip it on its head, right? They were partnered with Sony for so long with these mini content exclusives.
Well, Activision ones, yeah.
Activision was, correct. Really, was that partnership more Activision side and not Bungie side?
The way it appears optically to people outside of the actual development space, it looks more like a Sony and Activision deal because...
Call of Duty.
Well, Activision partnered with Bungie on this, right? They don't own Bungie. Bungie was never owned by Activision. But the way Bungie appeared at E3 and all that stuff and all the consoles were always PlayStation and always on the Sony stage, I'll bet you Activision was like... We'll do a deal with Sony, and what we'll ask of Bungie is a small piece of exclusive.
Phil Spencer did make that tweet saying he's really excited to see what they do forward. He's building a stable of independent developers. Here's another thing that I was going to bring up before you said this, but this is perfect. They've never made PC games before. Vicarious Visions made the PC port of Destiny. What if they just went to one console?
Oh, God.
That would be kind of crazy,
wouldn't
it? And
that console is Nintendo Switch.
That's absolutely bonkers. Yeah. So I just want to say they need the PC fan base.
Oh, absolutely.
And the PlayStation fan base and the Xbox fan base.
I mean, if
there's no way they're going console exclusive.
No, of course not. I don't think that's why I think Microsoft's actually an interesting proposition. Like people think of Microsoft as the Xbox people, and they are, right? Yeah. But Microsoft, it's no doubt, has a vested interest in PC games, and they have said all of their first party games from here on out, and when I say here on out, I mean whenever Phil actually announced this, like last year, all Xbox first party games are going to be Xbox and PC.
Play, right?
We take that to mean even Halo 6 or Infinite.
So
my point is, if you're Bungie and you're looking for the ability to, one, make the game you want, but two, not risk, like, you know, shutting down your studio over a bad move, and you need a partner, a windfall to back you, Microsoft might actually be the right partner because
yes, and they're going to get something exclusive for it.
Yeah, the way that they're poised, Microsoft, and this is actually, you know, go check out Unlock. They've been talking a lot about this. Everyone knows Xbox One struggled this generation, but the way Phil Spencer's been setting up for 2020 and beyond is actually... It's pretty visionary, right?
Yeah.
This idea of a streaming-only console box, building the first-party studios that they have – or not first-party. Well, yeah, they are first-party, like Ninja Theory and all that stuff. Like, they're poised to really make a big splash the next generation, and potentially Destiny's a big part of that, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And if you think even trying to – like the Xbox launch, thinking about like DRM and Kinect and all the rest of that stuff, it was a very different time.
Different lead and
different
everything.
Yeah.
That's like, the other thing is you might bring up like, well, Microsoft already had a shot at working with Bungie and they overstepped and Bungie left. And that's true.
Phil Spencer in the helm.
But not with Phil Spencer. Right. And I feel like Phil Spencer is really a guy who gets what's going on in the in this generation. And not only is he a gamer, but he's a developer. Like he gets what developers face. In terms of their creative challenge, and he's really on board with facilitating that.
Yeah.
I mean, who else would get games like Ori and the Blind Forest off the ground, you know, on a major console, right? Mm-hmm. I just think – and Cuphead, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm not saying that this is the right move, but if I'm Bungie, like – and Microsoft wants it, I would at least hear them out.
Well, of course. And the distribution platform is totally different. Like, could maybe Bungie be the first, like, AAA game that doesn't ship a retail copy? Like, I don't think that that's maybe what they're thinking, but Fortnite is not really shipping retail copies. They're offering codes in stores. You can go there and get a box that says Fortnite. There's no disc in it.
Spoiler warning, that's how they've been doing PC games for a while.
But that's what I mean. I know that. But my point is they haven't been doing console games like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so console and Xbox games, for the most part, I think have lived in the retail space. And there's a whole bunch of pros and cons about that and how that involves businesses like GameSpot.
Big pros, like if you don't have to go to disc, you're not paying for boxes, you're not paying for discs. Like, that's actually a lot of cost saved.
Yeah,
and if you're independently publishing, that's actually, you know, that's a lot of money saved.
I understand your point. They're absolutely going to be on disc and in stores. There's
There's too much of middle America.
There's a bunch of stuff that we don't understand. Yeah. Absolutely. But
But they don't have a publisher. They do not have Activision willing to handle that. And that's one of the things they handled.
Yeah.
You got to focus as box art for different sections of the world. Yeah. Like, there's so much to consider there.
You got to pay the truck drivers to drive the games to the stores. Like,
it's all part of it. It's all part of it. Yeah, like, the box displays and, like, making sure brand awareness is apparent in all the stores. There's all that business aspect of it that needs to be considered.
But remember when we talked about, like, how even just always online, that was, like, such a problem in the Xbox One, PlayStation 4 launch era. Now it's like you have to play Destiny connected to the internet regardless. So even it's like the game is a big game and you don't have a retail disc in it, like, I don't have a disc. I have a download code. Mm-hmm. And the game has so many updates and there's new DLC and there's a bunch of patch content coming all the time.
That's
like,
a good point.
So I know we're going long on this particular topic, but I had one more thing to add, which is the kind of other side of this that no one's talking about. Or I've seen a few people on Twitter talk about it, which is that, you know, we all think that this is a great positive thing for Bungie, and I think there's a lot of reasons to think that. We've also mentioned that there are potentially some cons, right? But from Activision's perspective, I think this is interesting, which is I saw some people tweeting about, like I said, no one counts money better than Activision in this industry. No one.
Oh.
How much do you think this divorce is Activision seeing the decline of Destiny and realizing that this is a we need to cut our losses and get away from this.
I never thought about it from that perspective.
It's an interesting point of view.
You know,
like,
that is what I thought when I said, when I saw the statement. It's like, and it's separation or business or divorce, because there's lots of those things. Like, everybody's obviously
Everybody lasts on that word divorce. One article said the word divorce, and now everybody keeps saying
it. It is, but it's very true. And your brain goes, okay, well, who initiated it? So there
who
are
gets
a bunch
the house.
Yeah, and who gets the kids? There's a bunch of things that people start talking about, and you want to assume, and this is potentially maybe the case, that it is all well, and obviously they had some things that led them to this point, but maybe it can go forward, and they just can coexist, because obviously they're both not going away. Mm-hmm. But how does that relationship look moving forward?
Well, I'll say this, just looking at our comment sections over the last few weeks, the negative vitriol on IGN platforms specifically towards Destiny is overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's overwhelmingly negative. So, like, brand perception is something that they're going to have to overcome. Most people aren't going to know that this happens, and when the next one comes out, there's still probably going to be a lot of feelings of betrayal, and somehow they have to figure out what to do with that. I think a lot of people are excited about this. They're willing to give them the chance, and we'll see what happens, but a lot of people aren't even going to know. Steven, do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, my point of view is, like they said in the statement, whenever they started developing Destiny, they had a huge vision for the game, and they couldn't back that up without Activision's money.
Yeah.
Activision bought it in, and once they started making the game, they realized they had different points of views, different perspectives that clearly weren't going to make, that clearly they weren't going to coerce. So, like, I think it was Jason Schreier that said when they announced that they split from Activision, everyone was happy. They, like, popped champagne.
I think.
So what I think is happening is they realized mutually that Activision's plan was not going to match up with Bungie's plan.
Yeah.
Remember, Luke Smith tweeted after that earnings call that they were happy with Forsaken, even though Activision wasn't.
Yeah.
So Bungie really hears they're betting on themselves. Yesterday, Luke Smith tweeted again saying Guardians make their own fate, which
is a vault of glass Atheon term.
Yeah.
And what they're saying is we know what the community wants. We kind of have a pulse of what they want, which is a lot of Forsaken, and we know how to make that content. And Activision, like, you're right. Maybe they think Destiny or Bungie can't do it, which is why they cut their losses. But Bungie's betting on themselves at this point.
Yeah, and that was the point of view I wanted to bring up. Is like, we're all obviously big fans of the game, big supporters of Bungie, and big players of the game. I did see some people, like industry analysts and stuff, who are not fans of the game and haven't played, who said, "Look, if you look at this from outside of being a Guardian and stuff.
Yes.
If Activision counts money better than anyone, and if they were like, there's no money here, that is potentially a really bad sign.
Activision's also been getting hammered since October. Their stock's down like $30 a share.
Yeah.
They're not doing great.
Yeah.
Blizzard.
Like on that earnings call when they were like, Destiny didn't perform, you think that's a lie? Like, no, they have projections. They have really smart people who are tallying up all this stuff and coming up with projections for what they think the game should do. And if it comes under that, That doesn't fly with a company like Activision.
It didn't say didn't perform. It said it didn't meet their expectations.
Yeah. Okay.
So, which again, the phrasing though is important because again, this is how I think miscommunication happens, right? Because I think that it probably was seen as still a good thing and a viable product, but everybody probably has goals that
Obviously not, right? They let him go.
But that's my point. To what extent, I don't know if we'll ever know, right? Yeah.
You guys are definitely seeing – well, you're trying to see the positive aspect, but the industry is getting hammered right now. EA's stock is in the toilet.
Yeah.
Activision's is too.
Yeah.
And that's been happening since like October. They have major challenges ahead.
Yeah.
So Bungie going independent, this might be – this is the best thing for them going forward for sure, 100%. Okay. But there is no doubt about the challenges that they're going to face.
Yeah.
And maybe the revenue that isn't there is Activision goal revenue. But if their goal is just to be creative and develop something and make a little bit of money as opposed to truckfuls of money, I'm okay with that.
And that is where I think the perception lies. Cause it's funny. Yeah. When we heard this in the office, everybody came and was like, what does this mean? And our brains are going like, oh, I think this is Destiny and Bungie being able to kind of do what they want and not feel that pressure. Everybody on the outside is kind of going like, I don't know, man. Activision provided a lot of support. So it's like, even in our office, it's crazy how the people, I think like us who feel like we're in tune with Destiny feel one way. And there's very much, like an external perception that, yeah, I think there's going to be a bunch of other opinions that come out later on.
I'd like to think that at some point, Bungie said, you know what? The money's great, but it's affecting our creative vision too much, and we don't care that much about the money. We want to make a f***ing awesome game.
Yep.
And that's what they're going to do going forward.
I don't think Bungie makes this decision without believing in themselves.
32 Absolutely.
So let's look at what's going on in Destiny right now. We brought up Niobe Labs and the community before this explosion of news happened, had a lot to say about it. Niobe Labs was a puzzle that was included in the game, and it was supposed to unlock the Forge when somebody solved it. Guess what? They still haven't solved it.
Crazy.
Hopefully GLAAD does it. Hopefully any of the other streamers working on it does it. But shout out to GLAAD for his commitment.
And Datto too.
Datto stayed on it for like 30 hours.
Yeah.
So some of the reactions just from Twitter were, here's one from Blue Westlow. He says, Niobe Labs is clearly cool. Having a huge puzzle bringing the community together is awesome. The issue is how remarkably out of place the activity is. The reason people love these puzzles is because they are bonuses on a journey, not requirements to continue it. So let's use that as a kickoff to our reactions to Niobe Labs and what we thought about this sort of puzzle event and how everything went. Because eventually Bungie said, they're not going to solve it. We're going to unlock it for everybody anyway. And then the TLDR version is that everybody felt weird and sort of burnt by it because they invested that time. At least the five people that were trying to do it did.
Okay, well, that's different because that is not everybody. And that's what's weird is that we're talking about this. Did you try it?
I did.
Did you?
I did not.
Did you?
Nope.
Okay, so 3 out of 4 of us didn't try it. Yeah. Now, I logged on and saw Datto and others doing it. I am at the place where I wanted to try it. I was going to dial you guys up and say, hey, let's give this a shot. There was a part of me that was kind of like glad that the streamers
couldn't
do it.
Them? Not me.
No, I did.
Oh, okay.
No, I said like I was going to call you guys up.
Give me a call?
No, I was going to call you guys up and say, hey, let's give it a shot. But only because stop that. But only because the streamers couldn't do it. So it was the first time that
hey, I have a chance.
Yes.
Can I solve the puzzle?
You don't.
CJ, I stayed up because I'm like, I want to contribute. I want to figure out something that nobody has figured out. And I feel like a lot of people in the community stay that way.
Yes.
I was up till like 3 a.m. watching Datto. I'm like, how can I help him?
Yes.
What can I do? And that's what Raid Secrets is doing.
Exactly.
That was a really cool feeling.
Because this is a thing that I think that in the Vidoc, I was watching it yesterday. Steve and Scott both said, you know, the funny thing with surprises is we can't tell you them. And sometimes we're going to land on a good surprise and sometimes we're not. And he kind of basically alludes to that in the video. What's weird is that I think this is one of those things where it wasn't really tied behind grinding to power level. I mean, assuming you had 650. Right? Like assuming we're all at 650, which I am, and I haven't even done a lot of the content yet from raids and all that stuff. But that's what's crazy. You felt like you had a chance if you were at 650. Mm-hmm. It was not, hey, grind for a week, get there maybe, and don't know what the power level is. Mm-hmm. This kind of felt like everybody was on an even playing field. That's what I think is interesting to me.
I have very mixed feelings about Niobe Labs. Yeah. I like it. I like that they added puzzles. I don't like it because they locked a lot of people out of content. So the majority of the player base is just sort of sitting around waiting for like the five streamers who are really, really close and regularly getting there to unlock this so that they could experience the new content.
I felt like we were kind of cheering them all on in a way. I did feel like it unified the community in a weird way. Unfortunately, sometimes it does feel at the expense of Bungie getting crapped on. And I kind of hate that because then it turns into like, oh, this is dumb. Why would you guys do this?
Right? I mean, I wouldn't say that it's dumb. I think.
Oh, but people, like a lot of people were, and that's my point. You see that.
I mean,
is that
I'm
the
kind
frustration
of one of those people,
reaction?
Right?
There you go.
Like, I'm not saying
what was dumb about it.
Like, I just don't think an activity that literally no one can solve is fun.
Well, it's not, but your brain does not know that going in. It's only until it starts to go, okay, if Datto can't do it, then yeah, I feel like not every mortal man can.
I'm going to agree with what you said, but in a sort of a different way. I think the puzzles weren't telegraphed clearly enough. There was a lot of things in like the actual implementation of the puzzles. Like when you get a symbol correct or you do something correct, there is no indicator until you input the entire long sequence and then you get a bong.
Like why specifically it doesn't work, I think that's a different conversation, right? But what I look at is I followed a good amount of it on Twitch.
Yeah,
I haven't tried it myself yet. But I do think that there's a difference between having a high barrier to entry, something that's hard and difficult and requires a good amount of knowledge and skill and teamwork to achieve, something like the raid, versus an activity that's way too obscure such that the greatest and strongest players can't figure it out. Because what hope does it give the rest of us? And that's the problem is like, I think that most people felt like this is something that they'll never be able to do. And so they're stuck waiting for someone else to achieve it before that they can even get to the content. Now, what's interesting is I did see some people talking about how it's not just the puzzle itself is fine. It's the fact that content's behind it that no one can get to. So maybe if there was no content behind it and something else was behind it, a surprise of some sort, maybe that'd be more palatable for people.
That's why they open it. But an additional problem is the thing that's behind it is a ghost and an emblem. I think that's kind of crazy.
The reward.
Yeah, so like
the
remember,
reward is nothing, basically.
Cuz this idea, I'm not actually fighting for this idea that
well, the reward's solving the puzzle. Sorry, I don't want to say it's nothing. It's the victory of solving the puzzle, of
course.
Your
brain
but I want to bring up a separate situation where I think Bungie did this thing very well, which is like remember Wrath of the Machine? Like that exotic, what was it? Outbreak Prime, right?
Yeah.
That puzzle was in the raid since the beginning of the raid, and no one found out about it for months.
Yeah.
And I thought when they did, it was a huge moment, and it did all the things you said that this.
You
is
found
doing.
Out about it in that moment.
When it was solved, I was in the raid. Data was at that part, and I was like, everybody stop.
Yeah. So what I thought, so the things that this puzzle is doing in terms of unifying the community, creating excitement and support for the people who are getting it done, that all existed with Outbreak Prime.
Yeah.
But the expectation level of the community was different, which is that with Outbreak Prime, we had no idea what was behind that puzzle. Mm-hmm. We just knew that it was kind of there and it ended up being something we wanted. With this, we expected like this unlocks the Forge and the Forge better be awesome because no one can do it. Mm-hmm. And that's a different perspective that I think didn't work.
There's also a different perspective. I had this debate with CJ.
Yeah.
This puzzle, let's not even like, not even talking about what like the mechanics are of the puzzle. This puzzle is locking you out of content that you are expecting. There are four forges. We got three. We knew Niobe Labs was something to do with the Forge. Mm-hmm. And then I think a day before
they
Niobe Labs
came out. They told us it would unlock the Forge.
They told us a day before though.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is actually unlocking part of the DLC. The Outbreak Prime gave us a weapon. It did not lock campaign missions. It did not lock the ending of the raid.
Yep.
It was a bonus supplement quest or a riddle. This is completely locking you out of content. And to 99.9% of the community, it does feel like I paid for the content. I can't play the content until streamers unlock the content.
Yeah.
And then going into the puzzle itself, the thing people like about raids and stuff like that are there's mechanics to it. You're shooting people actively or shooting aliens actively. And it feels like, oh, this worked. Like, let's try this. This is you're doing waves and waves and waves. You're guessing for 30 seconds.
No checkpoint. Yeah.
You have no idea if you're getting close to it. If you wipe on wave 7, you have to do everything again and you don't even know how close you got to completing it. on a raid, you can see you got this close to killing the boss with his health. You got like the mechanics unlock something, or like you're progressing.
The raids also teach you throughout the steps of the raid. So by the time you're the final boss, oh, okay, we got to throw the balls at the thing to stop the fight mechanic.
There's things where you're progressing toward it, and this did not feel like it at all. Like I saw Ninji unlocked wave 7 or wave 6 by saying, dude, let's just stand here and shoot this thing. And it worked.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like trial and error.
The hint was a French tree. Right?
Like,
and somebody said, let's stand on butterfly and shoot the hell out of the tree. And it worked.
This riddle didn't feel like Destiny to me.
Yeah.
It did not feel like Destiny at all. However, I do love the fact that they are doing things like riddles and puzzles like that. This shouldn't discourage them from doing things like this. Like,
just improve.
Agreed.
Yeah. Penumbra is supposed to be a DLC of all riddles and things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's not like this.
Yeah.
But let's rewind though and pretend yesterday's news didn't happen. Looking at the feedback.
This episode would be much more negative.
Well, but that's my point. So I'm really hoping that people actually still feel that way about Bungie, because it's not my sense that people do. I feel like constantly that people forget, like people say things and then they go, oh, well, now this is good now because we're going to be much more patient. And No, people are not. Absolutely. They're not. I think they believe that they will. But in the moment, people will not.
Yeah, let's see how people reacted in the moment. Actually, I have some tweets here. Here's from Ramez. He was not happy. On a more serious note, making content that was clearly aimed exclusively for content creators and relying on them to unlock it for the bottom 99% was a big mistake on Bungie. Lesson learned: game is either too casual or too hardcore. That's Destiny in a nutshell.
They didn't find the sweet spot.
Yeah. It very much is a pendulum
going back and forth.
Yeah. Saint Order Rage just said, been live streaming for 32 plus hours working on this. Would have been pretty fun to get clues on the hour instead of this. So like, instead of just being locked out perpetually, they never gave a hint about that wave.
I
would have really liked to see a hint.
I said that too in my tweet.
You shouldn't need hints, right? Like if you're...
Better design
would have been great. Should indicate it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, is like the stuff I saw, the charts and the like for
the sword hilt with the stone.
What's the Rosetta Stone? The Rosetta Stone, the ciphers that people created to figure out these really obscure puzzles, that's too much, man. Yeah. Like this isn't I'm not Indiana Jones, like I shouldn't have to put together like crazy amounts of stuff like that. That said, I'm not against puzzles. I like puzzles, right? Exactly. But I do think like there's a right way to do it for what Destiny is and a wrong way. And I think this might skew more in the wrong way.
Yeah. It's interesting because we were talking about, have they ever really done something like this? And the analogy that Steven and I, or when we were talking, that I use is like, I think dogs was probably one of the most ambiguous encounters in a raid where you just didn't really understand what was happening. Now, I'm not comparing this to dogs, but you guys are all saying, oh yeah, I like puzzles, but there's not enough information. I didn't know if I was doing it right or all that stuff. I felt like that when we did the Leviathan with dogs.
Really? Well, the dogs have telegraphs though. There's plants that only light up in that section and glow.
Yes.
There are clearly dogs that you wipe when they kill you. Like there were hints.
There were hints.
In this, there's no hints. There's that one section where somebody on Reddit figured out that it's a levels puzzle and you have to shoot all this stuff in the right way. And the only way they knew it was successful is when they shot those 12 icons in the right way and then passed it. Like, wow.
So that's what I'm saying. I think what's interesting though is I was potentially expecting external hints through their Twitter or something. I thought this was going to be one of these things where it's like,
should it be like that?
Well, no, I'm not saying that it should, but these are the kind of things that I think that if they're not so concerned about having to meet deadlines and this and that they might try more of in the future to kind of see, because I think the coolest part about Destiny is the fact that you can engage with like the community and go back and forth solving things online and tweeting things. Oh, this is what we got going on here. What do you guys have? So I don't think that's a good thing overall, but I think there's some positive things to be gleaned from this, even though the experience
is probably. I agree with you. I just don't think Bungie is like, this isn't The Witness, you know? Like, yeah. I shouldn't be like a madman scribbling like in different languages in a notebook.
But
to
dude,
be able
the
to
Raid,
out how to get
Last Wish was kind of like
but
that.
But it wasn't like this.
No, but it had like callouts where it was the first time where I was like, okay, I have to look and go, okay, dragon left this. Like, until you actually learned the Raid and the callouts and the mechanics, you're right. It was much more mechanic based.
This is the cipher was designed for you and telegraphed to each of the players though.
You're right.
You had all the tools you needed to solve
in the game. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is where I disagree with CJ.
Well, I guess you do sort of. That's a bad argument.
Like, there were a ton of symbols in the Raid, and at first it's very overwhelming, but then as you're wiping it, which you should be the first time you're doing a Raid, you realize, oh, okay, there's like 12 total symbols. Clearly there's something matching up, like you're progressing towards something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This, there's nothing. Like, there's absolutely
Wave
nothing.
Seven, there's the symbols on the ground.
There's three swords.
Have you guys played The Witness? At the beginning, there are a bunch of puzzles that you look at and you're like, I have no idea how to do that. Yeah. And then you come back later on after you've learned a bunch about the game's mechanic and the language that it teaches you, and then you can solve it. That's how the game should be, which is like, when you go into a Raid, you're not aware of what you're looking at, but as you, through trial and error, through experimentation, through hypothesis and success, you formulate a strategy that works. That process didn't seem to exist in the Niobe Labs. It was literally all guesswork.
Yeah.
And there was no way to tell if your guesses were even
accurate or correct.
And that's the main way that I feel that they need to improve with it. I don't really have any other points I want to say about Niobe besides that it was an emotional roller coaster. It's kind of like, oh, I'm not even going to do it. I'm just going to let streamers do it. Oh, they didn't do it? Oh, I guess we'll check it out. All right. That's kind of cool. Oh man, Datto's stuck on that thing. I want to help him. I cannot sleep. There has to be something.
Yes.
All right. It's Void, Solar, and Arc. What could that mean? Like, is it the supers?
Also, are
where do
all
they
of these
stand?
Symbols?
Why are the swords different?
These trees, background. These different types of trees. Yeah. Like, what place does that have in the Destiny storytelling and the lore?
Mm-hmm. And in my mind, and I hate saying this, it for the first time I felt like streamers became mortal men. I felt like it was like they've probably been propped up in a way where they're just kind of like, oh, we can't relate. I mean, they really can't sometimes. And I think that it's interesting to have seen them go like, yeah, I can't do it.
Because what if the solution is everybody just shoots the monitors? Like just something very innocuous.
Well, here's the thing.
Easy.
When someone
Raid group never did that in
Shingle did it.
Yeah.
When someone says this content is exclusively designed for streamers, what they're saying is streamers, their livelihood depends on streaming a game for the people who do play hours and hours a day. And when you play a game for that long, hopefully you're good at the game, right? You have enough time to grind all the content. So you're going to have all the weapons because you do need all the forge weapons to even unlock or to even attempt Niobe.
You need three, right?
Well, you need
bow,
you need the
bow,
auto
sniper.
Bow LMG and sniper. Or do you need the auto? Maybe not.
Bow,
either way,
LMG.
You need to have done the content to do Niobe Blast. So when people are saying streamers, they're saying for the 1% who has enough time to do all the content. However, the reason why streamers are always the ones that finish it is because they have a very big knowledge of the mechanics of the game, and they have the time to unlock this. This, like, well, CJ was saying, this was something streamers couldn't do. I'd argue it doesn't matter. There's no skill level involved in this. There's no concept or knowledge or any mechanic-based thing that you've gotten in previous Destiny raids that would have helped you with this.
It's raid secrets, knowing about Norse,
Japanese,
Viking mythology.
This is guesswork, luck. There's no, like...
I would
anything.
I would argue strongly that it's not luck because of how much effort the Reddit community put into solving these puzzles. There's definitely a causal link between
it's
each.
It's not complete luck, like
though.
You're just shooting at random things, but at a point where you've exhausted all your options, it's like, let's just stand on butterfly and just shoot the freaking thing. That's all luck.
But I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's a reason they stood on butterfly and there's a reason they shot trees.
Because nothing else
out
worked.
Of frustration, and I would argue that that's bad puzzle design.
Oh, it
when
is
it's
bad
not
design.
Telegraphed enough. But I don't think they solved it. Well, okay, that one I'll say they solved through luck.
That was all luck. I was watching Ninji at that point where three people have to stand on butterfly and shoot a tree.
Yeah,
I think 1% shoot a tree. Those two happened happened to be right next to when he shot a tree, and it worked.
But my point is, I am still just intrigued by just that concept, because you're right. I agree with you. It is
what
luck.
Concept?
It seems
odd. Puzzle solving concept.
Well, the fact of just like everybody coming together with social media and Reddit and that being a part of the game that's not really in the game. I get it. It's not positive. We don't like it for the most part. But
wait,
it's an interesting concept. Well, that like you should be out. You shouldn't have to go outside of the game in order to figure it out. In a way, like that's mostly what we're saying here. It's like if something's based on luck, should it be able to have it all figured out in the game.
I mean, that's a part of it. What I'm saying is,
I don't mind that Reddit helps.
Well, I mean, you got to go outside the game for Outbreak Prime. Mm-hmm. Like that's
unless you knew binary off the top of your head.
Yeah, it's like I think what CJ is saying is it's a great thing that the community came together and are working together for this thing. And Destiny was top three in the Twitch directory for. It's been a while since it's been like that. But the mechanic itself wasn't fun to watch. It was like you're watching them do six waves and then, they have 30 seconds. Hopefully they get lucky.
A checkpoint or something. Yeah, more information would have been. I was really hoping they would have just given a hint somewhere on social media. Because I felt bad for the people who weren't able to do it.
I just foresee.
They could have been cagey about it. It's been 24 hours.
Well,
Maybe you
a good million
this.
Guardians are out there who hate the idea of being like, I want to do something in the game. I have to get a Twitter account now. Like this idea of, I think it's cool how it brings the community together and how the community can interact with one another to help solve a puzzle or a thing together. That's cool. But if that's built into the design, like it's meant to be that way, or you have to go to Reddit, now you need a Reddit account in order to be able to talk to people to get this thing done. Like I think that's bad design.
So let's give some feedback, just simple feedback. How do you improve for the next puzzle that you implement? And I think the number one thing that we all agree on is don't lock everybody else out of a mission because streamers can't solve a puzzle. So
this is a debate I had with CJ for like hours the other day, and I want to get your take on it. CJ was saying the forge wasn't locked because as soon as anyone did the Niobe Labs,
it was
open.
Mm-hmm. It was a path,
which is the same as the last mission in the campaign isn't locked. You just have to get to it by beating the previous missions, and That's interesting to me, but I do think it is locked.
That's crazy. It was literally locked until one other player did it.
But isn't that the same? So I'm on kind of both sides. CJ's point is the last mission of a campaign locked?
If you haven't done the other campaign missions.
Yeah, you have to get to it in order to beat it.
I think it's a bad analogy. So I'm not going to say that it is locked or not because you're progressing through a story.
So would you want Bungie to let you play the last mission of the campaign first without playing the rest of it? Would you want like a chapter marker where you're like, hey, I can access any part of this I want.
I want to know that I can play that final campaign mission, not that I'm locked out of it until CJ does it first.
I don't know.
That's the philosophy.
So CJ's
is the end of Battletoads locked because you suck too much to get to it?
Okay.
Like,
here's the thing, CJ. I get to the final mission and I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go, but I can't because CJ didn't solve the puzzle yet.
Well, so now you can
Exactly. That's what CJ's point to me was. You could do it. Like, you could solve the puzzle and unlock.
I'm not going
to
solve any puzzles. Come on.
So you agree that the forge is locked? Because I was saying the forge is locked.
Before they unlocked
it for
the rest of
the community, but I do understand what CJ's saying as well.
I would say it was locked.
I'm trying to think outside the box here, and I think that more often
outside the lock.
Oh, so there you go. And I guess
mystery
the forge
box.
Yeah, it didn't have a roof either. And everybody's like,
you're locked out
in.
Of the mystery box. You're locked out of the forge. You can't do it. Like for you.
So my point was the last mission of a campaign is technically locked from that point of view, but. You know how to get to the last mission. People have already done it. It's on you to get to the last mission.
It's also a grind or a skill-based thing. It's not a external puzzle that you have to solve.
That's true, too. So,
so you don't think it's locked?
No, I was trying to play devil's advocate. Yeah, to argue the fact that I think that when you look at it and if you take it in the context like that, you could say, okay, the expectation was, we knew there was something behind that. That's the forge. I was promised that. You owe me. But if they didn't communicate anything and you didn't know what, quote, you were supposed to get and the secret was the secret, that I think is, it's constantly the communication game. That's
so
the part of it
that
where
actually
I go,
goes back to what Destin
okay,
was saying. Like, if we were going to give feedback, I'd say one of my main pieces of feedback is like, if you're going to put something behind a puzzle or behind like an achievement or something, like maybe don't
say
tell
what
it is to tell people what it is, because you'll change their expectations.
And in the roadmap, they kind of didn't. They said Niobe Labs, not a fourth Forge, but we kind of knew. They said it the day before, right? Like,
yeah.
And so the messaging is always, that's the tricky part with Bungie. Mm-hmm. It's always what is said, how you interpret it, and then watching Reddit and the community and Twitter and everybody else kind of do their thing and seeing how it kind of evolves, right?
They also set an expectation with the release cadence of the of them.
No, totally. It does come down to expectation and release cadence. Like, if they never told us that there were four Forges, we would not know what to expect, and we wouldn't be so, or people wouldn't be so pissed that they couldn't get to the last DLC Forge that they paid for because no one could find out this convoluted puzzle.
That was my only.
Here's what's still driving me absolutely nuts, that has me opening up twice to see what's going on.
Yeah.
I just want to know what the answer is. What's the answer to part 7?
Yeah. Well,
what was the thing that we were supposed to be able to figure out? Yeah. And what were we missing this whole time?
You're right, because it gets to the point where it's not like, yes, we finished it. It's goddamn finally.
Yeah, exactly. And that's definitely where
they're treading in that water.
So in that feedback, I think, like, if you're going to make the reward, again, going back to feedback, I love this idea of putting something very, very worthwhile and awesome behind something, but not changing people's expectations about what it is. And then it taking a long time, like Outbreak Prime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, again, sorry to bring this up, World of Warcraft.
Wow.
There are puzzles in that game that literally took people 6 months to 10 months to figure out. Mm-hmm. And it's because they wanted to figure out the puzzle and had fun doing it, not because they expected or wanted or were promised something that's behind it.
And so, that's an expectation thing, because that's what the World of Warcraft players are saying in the office. Like, oh, only 24 hours? Man, they just gave it to them.
That's the problem, seriously, too, because we live in an era of instant gratification now.
Yep.
And I think what the community wants is they want puzzles, they want secrets that take less than 24 hours to solve, but no longer than that, because we want the reward.
Now that I can do other stuff, I'm glad the puzzle's there. I think whoever solves it, they deserve a better reward. But the fact that I literally couldn't do anything and I just have to sit on my hands because all my characters are max level, there's no weapons for me left to chase.
Was Crucible shut down? Could you not play any of the raids? Was the rest of the game locked
I've literally completed everything. They said, this is new content day where you're going to be able to finish
all the triumphs
box,
are done. Okay. All the triumphs are achieved. You got all the...
How many titles?
You got all the titles?
Zero. I don't want any of that stuff. I wanted to complete the Black Armory segment.
Because you knew it was there. Because
I do.
And that's all I'm saying. I agree. It's funny. I think that it's constantly the expectation thing.
If you ever say, I can't do the thing that I want to do because four streamers who are still trying that thing and banging their head against the wall haven't finished it yet, like, that's not a good feeling.
Oh, absolutely. But if you didn't know what it was and it was some kind of random puzzle, and then when the streamers or people figured it out, it just opened up this cool new thing for everybody.
That would be great. That's not what they did, though.
Right. Yeah. To me, that.
Well, eventually it is. They just unlock it, right?
Yeah, they just open it up.
Because it was too hard and people were angry.
But but it's interesting. To me, it's like that. I just hope that moving forward, that's what I'm saying. If Bungie does something like this in the future, there's this going to be this connotation now. It's like, oh, that's Bungie. And I hope that people potentially have this sympathetic, maybe compassion side of them that comes through.
Compassion on the internet?
Exactly. Well, that's my point.
Yeah, this ties into
It's really weird to hear.
This also ties into hardcore and casual, because you can't just have your game completely hardcore. Because if you think about it, if you're someone outside looking in and you're not a devoted Destiny fan, and you think to yourself, I want to get into this, but I don't want to have to rely on the top 1% to actually play the game.
You know what I do, Steven? I just don't play the game.
Exactly.
Which is why this is dangerous,
which is why I don't like when they completely block off new content with things like this. They need to block off supplementary content, quests or exotics and things like that. Then I think people like it.
Yeah.
Like, if this didn't block off the last Forge, I don't think anyone would have complained.
Yeah.
No.
Plus, like, exactly. I'm not complaining that it's hard. Like, you guys know me. I like it when things are difficult in the game.
Yeah. I don't mind. I was actually mad when they unlock the Forge.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
They should have done it.
I wanted a hint.
Exactly.
But, like, they, you know, something needs to be reasonably hard, right? Like for a reasonably knowledgeable and skilled player, they should be able to figure it out.
Yes.
If your best and brightest and most dedicated and most skilled guardians in the whole world can't do it, you got a problem.
I know Bungie likes the number 7. What if this is 7 of like 10 or 7 of 15?
7 out of 77.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like what if they have way more to go? Somebody made a Dilbert comic where it's like, oh, well, we should probably just let them try and figure it out, right? What part are they on? Oh, we've opened the...
This is funny because someone was like, the reason why they unlocked it were because like, Jesus, they're only on 7. There's 15. Just give it to them.
They'll never make it to the
Just give it to them. It's hopeless.
And I do. I sometimes feel like they're probably laughing at all. I was like, look at those rats.
Well, you know they have that theater. They have that theater room to watch the community do it. But it would be funny if no one knows this is the last wave, right? So like, it would be funny if they were like, dude, they're only on 7. It's been 29. I'll just give it to them.
Here's another analogy. Sorry. This is the last thing.
All right.
CJ, I really want to play your game. Okay, Destin, that's cool. Solve this Rubik's Cube first. No, I just want to play your game. Nope. Not until you solve the Rubik's Cube.
But I don't like Rubik's
Cube. I don't want to play it that bad.
I don't like Rubik's Cubes. If I actually was like a professional Rubik's Cube player or wanted to be invested into doing that, I probably would do it.
I really want to play your game. Play this game you don't like first in its entirety. I really hate that game.
My problem was with the whole, like, you could do it too.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it too, but the mechanics of the puzzle were so convoluted and big. You couldn't do it. So it's the same thing as saying,
maybe
there's a 10-foot rim.
Oh,
and soon as anyone dunks the ball, you can do it. Hey, 4 foot 11 guy, you can dunk the ball too. Well, go for it. It's like, I can't dunk the ball.
Oh, well, I guess you're going to have to wait.
Well, I guess you can't go behind the doors then.
I'm sure we need to wrap up the show on those analogies.
Really fun.
I know. And I just like doing that. I just like doing that. For me, it's this. I looked and I played over 10,000 Halo 2 matches. We were adding these up. I think 4,000 or 5,000 Halo 3, like 2,000 or 3,000 Reach. And those games were just PvP. I probably played the campaign 2 or 3 times in each of those games, but I played those games just because of the community, PvP, and the game felt good. To me, a lot of PvE is kind of like all extras, which crazy is we don't talk about Crucible that often because I think it's,
it sucks.
Well, there's also,
no, it doesn't suck.
PvP is not good right now.
No. Okay.
You know me. I'm a huge PvP guy.
No, I disagree. Like I've been going for Not Forgotten. I have a bunch of like, fusions and all that stuff. No, but my point is I actually like the new meta overall, but for the most part,
compared to Destiny.
But that's the thing. People are still latching onto what Destiny 1 was. And that I think,
and Halo 2.
You're that guy.
And Halo Reach.
I know.
You're the person who's always like, Destiny 2 is as good as Destiny 1 PvP.
Ties back into
but
the previous
I'm still
thing.
Liking it.
We haven't had a legit PvP sandbox update in what, like 5 months. That's not Activision's fault, right?
Yeah.
So true. Like things like that.
In the background, I'm sure there are some pressure things.
By the way,
though.
There's a Bungie update being released like now.
Yeah.
That was delayed.
Talk about the sandbox update. But what
they
I'm saying is
talk about a sandbox update.
We'll
bring it up next week.
I think though what you're saying is I think there's a lot of those things in the background that we might not ever know. And
that's
true.
Like
they
might
those
have
things have impacted because they're shifting resources. Like if you think that Curse of Osiris and Warmind and all the problems that quote people said that they were tuning and fixing.
Yes.
And in that time, they still made Forsaken. Like, and again, they had assistance, but those things all it just didn't happen out of nowhere.
Oh, of course not.
Like,
true, but I also
what does that
fail
have to do with anything?
I also fail to see. how Activision's how they don't have to rely or cater to Activision's schedule makes sandbox updates come faster. Like I don't
because
see that happen
that's
either.
It's not a matter of like release schedule and stuff. It's a matter of figuring out what the right thing to do is. And if something is really overpowered or imbalanced or if people are just whining because they suck.
I don't have any new
exotics.
And guess
what? It's usually the latter.
I don't have any new exotics. Are you going to nerf those before I get a chance to play them?
They did. They nerfed Thousand Voices.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'm not happy.
Well, it's no.
Well, nobody's ever going to be happy.
There you go.
That's true.
Well,
that's
my point. What I'm talking about is the
final segment was supposed to be just a few ways they could improve their next puzzle. That's all I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Well,
we're kind of way off the rails.
The thing, what I'm talking about is like with the bug with Guishan's vest, you could literally have unlimited super. Mm-hmm. It took them a month or two to fix that. It shouldn't take a month or two to fix an unlimited super. Mm-hmm.
That's not broken. Yeah. I'm a hunter.
Yeah. All right, we're at an hour and 5 minutes or so.
Ooh,
we should probably wrap it
quick
up.
Question, Destin. Yeah. This is basically the end of Black Armory now. Would you change your review score?
No.
Still 5.5?
Yeah, I'm still there. Like, in a lot of the issues that I brought up within the review still remain. Like, I'm on the very grindy quest now to finish unlocking the box.
Yeah.
And while, yes, it does give you something to do, I just feel like there should be more variation there. So, yeah, I might go back retroactively and add more context now that more content's been released. But, yeah, I mean, that's just...
The score doesn't change for you.
The number that everybody latches onto, like, that didn't really change. The raid's still bugged.
What'd you get again? 5.5?
Still very easy.
5.5, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at. 11. Anyway.
11.5 for me.
11. Wow. Anyway, that's where I landed. It doesn't matter. Your opinion still matters, and how you feel about the game is what's the most important. Don't worry about a dumb number that I put on a game. That said, that's all we have for this episode. Good luck to Bungie with your new independence. We're really, really excited to see what you do next. Mm-hmm. Until next time, everybody, Guardians out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.